Morning. How many of you have had a song stuck in your head any part of this week? Or all of this week? If you're a parent of small children, you've probably had a lot of awful songs stuck in your head all week. Not that they're bad, they just get repetitive after a while. Sometimes I found myself with a song stuck in my head from when I was a kid, and I haven't heard it since middle school or elementary school or high school, and then I start singing it, and then it clicks. I should not be singing this song. Like, it just, you know, like years later, you finally realize what it is, and then you realize it's stuck in your head, and you're going around singing it, and then you shouldn't. You know, singing has that effect on people. There are so many times when we think that there's a song that we don't know, right? We can't remember it, and then all of a sudden maybe you hear a line from the chorus and you go, oh yeah, I know that song. It interacts with our memory in a way that spoken word does not always get the opportunity or the ability to do. And it's more than just fun and enjoyable, right? It's important to us as people. We sing Happy Birthday. I saw today, Melissa's birthday is today. I don't see her. But, you know, we sing Happy Birthday to people, yeah? Is it? Yeah? Oh, okay. Well, happy birthday. So we'll say a prayer for her not feeling well later. Birthdays, we all sing happy birthday. It makes everybody awkward and uncomfortable, right, when they're all looking at you. But we do it every time. I don't know why. I'm not sure if anybody likes it, but we do. You know, it's just part of what we do. Songs are a part of what just brings people together. I sing songs at funerals, at weddings, at Christmas. A lot of the hymns that we have are actually old drinking songs. One of my favorite songs, Be Thou My Vision, the tune from that is an old Irish bar song. And what they would do is people who were evangelizing at that time knew that the people knew those tunes, and so they taught them words to that would teach them biblical truths. So they didn't have to try to focus on two things at once, learning a song and learning the words. All they had to do was pick up the words, and they already knew the song. And we have several like that. When you've had a bad day, sometimes you put on music. When you've had a good day, you put on music. When you're in a good mood, you sing. When you're in a bad mood, sometimes you sing. You know, there's just it's important to us. Is it important to God? We know that He expects it of us, but clearly He's made us in a way that song is important to us as people. If you want to go ahead and turn to Deuteronomy, the lesson that we'll be looking at is going to be mostly out of Deuteronomy 31 and 32. And I think this shows a couple things that we'll hit on today. One is that singing is not just a good thing for us, it is a God-given thing for us. And then also that He gave it to us for purpose, not merely just for enjoyment, but also to teach us and to remind us of things and to bring us back to Him. And I know that this congregation loves to sing already. And hopefully this just gives you another thing to think about. And for those that maybe don't enjoy the song, you know, the singing of worship, this gives you maybe some perspective on how God views it and how He viewed it in the Old Testament here. In Deuteronomy 31, it's basically time for Moses, who has been leading God's people now for about 40 years, to step out of the picture. It's time for him to die. You know, God puts it very bluntly. The Lord said to Moses in verse 14, "Behold, the days approach when you must die." Okay, it's pretty clear. It's time's up for Moses, and a new leader, Joshua, is getting ready to step in. And so God brings the two of them together and kind of has a conference with them and tells them, "Moses, you're running out, you're done. Joshua, you're going to have to step in. Here's what it's going to be like." And here's what God tells them in this transition time. This is also a transition because they're about to go from the, you know, wandering for 40 years in the desert to entering the promised land. Okay? So two big transitions here. And this is what God tells them. Picking back up where we left off in verse 14, we'll have a somewhat longer reading. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tent of meeting, that I may commission him. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tent of meeting. And the Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood over the entrance of the tent. So basically they're trapped in this tent by a pillar of God cloud. All right. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers. Then this people will rise and whore after foreign gods among them in the land that they are entering. And they will forsake me and break my covenant that I have made with them. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them, and they will be devoured. And many evils and troubles will come upon them, so that they will say in that day, have not these evils come upon us because our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil that they have done, because they have turned to other gods. So pause there for just a minute. There's God's opening statement. Moses, you're going to die. And basically, as you guys go into this promised land, you're all going to forget about me because you're going to go after other things. You'll be distracted and tempted by all of the false gods that are around you to the point that you forget about me and I will forsake you. So far, this doesn't sound like a whole lot of positivity in this message. This is fairly doom and gloom. He continues in verse 19. Now, therefore, because of all the stuff that you're about to do, write this song and teach it to the people of Israel. Put it in their mouths that this song may be a witness for me against the people of Israel. For when I have brought them into the land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to give to their fathers, and they have eaten and are full and grown fat, they will turn to other gods and serve them and despise me and break my covenant. And when many evils and troubles have come upon them, this song shall confront them as a witness, for it will live unforgotten in the mouths of their offspring. For I know that they are inclined to do even today before I have brought them into the land that I swore to give. So Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the people of Israel. And then as that continues, he basically makes the transition official. He gives Joshua some words of encouragement. And then in verse 32, or in chapter 32, at the very end of 31, then Moses spoke the words of this song until they were finished in the ears of all the assembly of Israel. And 32 is almost in its entirety a song that God gave his people. And he did that for a very specific purpose. Hopefully you caught that as we were reading. That purpose was not just, hey, you guys like singing? Here's another song. Here's a little ditty to help you remember some things. It was specifically a song that, one, they would not forget. So I don't know if it was super catchy or just, or you know, how it exactly sounded. If you try to put all of chapter 32 to song, I think you'll struggle to do it. It's not easy. I don't know if this is like a long ballad or what, but whatever it is, they won't forget it. It will be handed down generation to generation. And it will serve this purpose, that because I know that they will go after these other gods and forget about me, I'm going to give them this song so that they will remember it and it will convict them. And then they will remember who I am, and they will come back to me. What to me is really fascinating about this is that God knows how critical a song can be to his people. He had just given them, and will continue to give them, all of the law of Moses, right? The law is very long and lengthy. There's a lot to keep up with. There are a lot of rules and particulars. Chances are, you won't remember every bit of that law, right? Especially if you're, it's not like they had all their copies as they wandered through the desert and entered the promised land. They got to hear it once a year and then bits and pieces as necessary during particular festivities and things like that. Chances are they were going to forget parts of it and not be able to keep up with everything and need some help. God knew that, and he said, because you're going to forget some of it, here's a song. And here's the important parts. Not that they're not all important, but here's the stuff I need you to remember. The very basic principles. And so as you read this song, I'm not going to read all of it. It's 43 verses. It's a long song. Much longer than probably anything that we've sung today. And they were going to remember all of it. But I'll give you the gist of it. The gist of the song, he opens up and by saying, how wonderful and good and great God is. Just for his power, for his creation, for what he's done. He then says in verse 6, "Do you thus repay the Lord, you foolish and senseless people? Is not he your Father who created you, who made you and established you? Remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask your Father and he will show you, your elders and they will tell you." So he goes on and says, basically he's spelling out for them all the things that they were about to do. I'm good. I am your creator. And then this is how you will end up treating me in kind. You will go after other gods. You will go after other things. You will forget about me. The song continues to say, you will be crushed by these things because I will give you over to them. This is what you've chosen. I'll let you choose that. You want to go after other things that are not me? I will let you do that. And at some point, they will just devour you. They'll make your lives miserable. And then in the end, he talks about how in their weakest moments, when they finally basically hit rock bottom and they realize what they've done, God will come back in and take them and care for them. When they turn back to him, God will take care of his people. And he ends with just this. All the enemies of God that have basically made the children of Israel, their lives miserable, he says, "For I lift up my hand to heaven and swear, as I live forever, if I sharpen my flashing sword and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will take vengeance on my adversaries and will pay those who hate me. I will make my arrows drunk with blood and my sword shall devour flesh, with the blood of the slain, the captives, from the long-haired heads of the enemy. Rejoice with him, O heavens, bow down to him, all gods, for he avenges the blood of his children and takes vengeance on his adversaries. He repays those who hate him and cleanses his people's land." Now that doesn't sound, again, super friendly, right? We're not used to the wartime type of life where we're going to be led in and defeat, literally, through war, our enemies, in the sense that God's people did then. But the reason I wanted to do this is that this song that he gives them is essentially the same song of all of human history. See, in this song, God says at the beginning, "I am God, I will care for you, you will leave me. I will rescue you, and I will punish those who have put you in this awful position." And there's a real physical sense that that happened in the lifetimes of the people that he gave that song to. But this is also perfectly true in Christ. That God created us. He is good. He made us by his hand. He spoke us into existence. He cared for us, gave us what we needed. And then we turned from him. We're distracted, right? We got caught up in all the things that are around us, whatever that is. For you, for me, they're all different things. And while we may not have a statue God, an idol, so to speak, we have things that just pull us away from God and who he is and his goodness. And we do the same thing. Our lives get sometimes comfortable and easy. Not that they're always like that, but comparatively to what they could be. And then we get to this point where we just forget that we need God to exist, even on a day-to-day basis, because we get distracted by all this other stuff and we don't feel like we need him. And in those moments, all that stuff that calls us away from him, it never gives us peace. It never gives us happiness or joy. Maybe very temporarily, right? For just a moment. It never satisfies. And it usually, and eventually always, leads us to despair. And God says, when we recognize that, he has sent Christ to save us from it. And more than that, that permanently, forever, he will cleanse the land. Like he did for the Israelites, he will do for us in an eternal sense. That all those things that call us away from him and distract us from him, they will be done away with. There's going to be a day when we don't have to struggle through those things anymore. We don't have to fight through them. And so, really, as this lesson kind of draws to a close, we know that God expects and appreciates our singing and our songs. But if you are struggling with the things that call you away from God, God himself gives you song to remember him and to come back to him and remember how good he is. And so what I would just encourage you to do for this week or for this life, or when you come into those moments of being tempted and distracted, remember any of these number of wonderful songs that we sing, whether they're psalms directly from the Bible or they're anything that man has made that are reliant on the principles of the Bible. Remember those songs and allow those to call back. And of course, that will only happen the more that we sing, the more that we rely on God's word to fill our hearts. Colossians 3, and this will be the last thing that we read. It's a familiar passage for most. Colossians 3, starting in verse 12, says this: "Put on then, as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience, bearing with one another, and if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other. As the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. And above all these, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly," and here's how, or one way that it dwells in you richly: "teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." As we sing whatever songs we have left, certainly an invitation song, I hope that the word of Christ will dwell in your hearts and will lead to those fruits that we just listed and read about, the peace of God, that those songs will call us back to him, because we know that he is a good and wonderful God and he has given us Christ so that at the day of judgment we can be his forever. If you need help and encouragement in that, or if you need to become a Christian today, I do hope that you'll come forward as we stand and sing or talk to one of us afterwards.